Right, folks, good morning. We'll just get started in a few minutes. Sorry about the delay. But apparently, if you have a whole bunch of geeks here in a place, you know, the internet does happen to go down once in a while. So it's going to be fun. We're actually going to run all my demos, as I was telling the audience, you know, off of this LG phone. So I'm actually VPN'd back into Corpnet back in Redmond off of this LG phone. So we're going to see if the demos run. I guess you might see a little bit of a lag when I actually right-click and stuff like that, so just bear with us while we try and do this. All right. What joke? So Hector here is saying, say a joke. I said, what joke? I mean, I'm a joke standing up here with no internet connectivity. Yeah, it is, like I was telling, it was pretty exciting. You know, just about 5 minutes before Brad went on, we lost entire internet connectivity. And all of our demos were actually structured where we were working off of rigs back in Redmond. So we lost Corpnet. We actually have a pipe, separate pipe from the internet all the way back to Corpnet. We lost that pipe. We lost the internet. So backstage, there was a lot of swearing, I guess. You know, not that geeks ever swear, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. All right, let's get started. So my name is Vijay Tiwari. I'm a program manager in the virtual machine manager team in System Center. You know, been with the VMM team for a while. So first of all, you know, it's been really amazing to work with a lot of customers and partners to actually develop VMM. That is a picture of the VMM team taken just a few days back when we had great sunshine in Redmond. And so we really want to thank all of you for all the feedback and support that you've given us over the years. We really, really appreciate that. So thank you so much. And we have quite a few people here from the VMM team, so I'd like them all to stand up. And, you know, they've been really, really instrumental in getting VMM to you, and they've been really helpful to get us here. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And you'll see all of them here this week. Just as me, I'll be here. And so, you know, we'd love to meet with you, get feedback, learn from you, and, you know, really humbled by the opportunity to sort of work with all of you. Thank you so much. All right. So, the question all of us, you know, a lot of people ask me is, why do we need SP1 in the first place? And the answer is actually pretty simple. So when we released System Center 2012, we only supported Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1, and that was released way back last year in April. And, you know, as Windows Server 2012 launched, we needed a way to be able to manage all the fantastic capabilities that came as a part of Windows Server 2012. And that's where System Center 2012 SP1, you know, came into its being. And so Virtual Machine Manager is, in fact, the only component in System Center 2012 SP1 which requires to be run on a Windows Server 2012 server. It will manage, you know, down-level Hyper-V like Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1 and the Microsoft Hyper-V Server 2008 R2 SP1, but the VMM server itself needs to be run on a Windows Server instance, Windows Server 2012 instance. And the reason for that is that, you know, we actually have a strong dependency on the storage management API capability which is there in Windows Server 2012, which allows us to actually manage partner storage as well as the Windows-based storage from a single API instance. And that API is available only in Windows Server 2012. I get this question asked a lot of me as well. Why can't you run on down-level operating systems? So the reason is because of this capability. And that capability is not available in Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1. And that's why you'll need at least one and maybe two if you're trying to cluster the VMM server itself. Additionally, we support Citrix Zen Server 6, and we support VMware vSphere 4.1. When we released SP1, we only supported 5.1. But a lot of customers asked us to support 5.0 as well, so we actually now have updated our documentation to reflect that we will also support vSphere 5.0. So we support vSphere 5.0, 5.1, and 5.0 all the way down. All right. That's pretty interesting. All right. So so the first thing I actually want to talk was a little bit of an agenda, right? And what I wanted to talk to you about was that we're going to go through a layered cake model. Now, I don't know how many of you have actually used VMM in the past, but with a large audience like this, what I've tried to do is structure the talk so that I give you a sense of what VMM 2012 was and then layer on top of it what is comes in SP1, so that we can all follow along. Now, normally, I would actually encourage people to ask questions while I'm going along, but I think with such a large audience, I'm going to hold that off, and let's get questions at the end. But if there is an absolute burning question that you absolutely must get answered, feel free to come up to the microphone, and I'd be happy to answer it. All right, so what we'll do is we'll first talk about, the underlying infrastructure, how we manage the underlying fabric, how we configure and deploy that fabric. We'll go a layer above to actually see how you can actually do cloud models and delegation, and how you can actually do standardized application deployment in VMM. And so we'll build it all the way from ground up and go all the way to the top. So when we actually talk of deploying the fabric, right, there are four elemental pieces that we actually look at. You need to be able to deploy your compute servers, which effectively means that you in the data center need to be able to bare metal deploy your machines. You need to be able to enable Hyper-V on them, have them join to a domain, and be ready for you to do something with, right? Then next comes storage. We've got a variety of different storage that you deal with in the data center, block-based storage and file-based storage, and we want you to be able to manage that storage from VMM. Now, not all of the deployment of the storage is possible with SP1, but I can assure you that that's something that we are definitely looking forward to do in the future. You next move on to the networking perspective. You need to be able to manage your networks. And, in VMM 2012, we introduced this concept of a logical network, and I'll talk a little bit about that. And then layered on top of that, we allowed you to actually create virtual networks on the fly. And then you want to be able to take all this, compute networking and storage and have it exposed up as a cluster, right? Because you want to make sure that your workloads are highly available. And you do that by clustering your Hyper-V hosts. So all the VMs that are deployed on those Hyper-V hosts are highly available and are not brought down in case one of the hosts comes down. And so what we'll do is, in this conversation, we'll walk through this entire flow of what it needs to actually deploy your compute, deploy your storage, networking, and clustering. All right? So let's first talk about compute. By the way, can people in the back hear me? I'm sorry, I should have asked that first. I guess not. Can people in the back hear me? All right, thanks. Appreciate it. All right, so let's first talk of bare metal deployment, right? And we get asked this question a lot of times. Well, a configuration manager already does bare metal deployment. Why did you add it in VMM? And the reason we added it in VMM, and by the way, we actually learned from what configuration manager does and actually even reused some of their technologies to actually, provide the same system to you. The reason we did it is because a lot of data center administrators are now actually running specialized tasks, and they want a single pane of glass to be able to manage on their underlying fabric from a single tool and not have to jump from tool to tool. Right? And, even though we, from a UI perspective, we are definitely consistent between Configuration Manager and VMM, Configuration Manager is leaning more and more towards managing clients. Right? And so we want to make sure that you have tools that are available to you as a data center administrator to manage your fabric. So that's why we actually included in 2012 the ability to do bare metal deployment. So this capability of deploying a Hyper-V host is available in VMM 2012. And then I'll talk about how we enhanced it in SP1. So on the left-hand side of the screen, you actually see a bunch of artifacts that we actually require. You obviously have deployed a VMM server. We also require you to actually have a WDS server, which is where you place all the images that you want to have deployed onto the Hyper-V host. And then you have a library server where you keep all the artifacts, such as the VHD, of which you're going to deploy off of the bare metal host. So way back in Windows Server 2008 R2, we actually allowed you to physically boot a Windows Server box from a VHD. And the idea there was that we want you to have a consistent set of images that you can use regardless of whether you're deploying a physical machine or you're deploying a virtual machine. So you can use the same VHD, and of course there'll be some difference of drivers, but as long as the drivers exist, you can use the same image in your corporation to actually boot physical machines as well as boot virtual machines. And so VMM took a strong dependency on that, and whenever we do bare metal deployment, we actually boot that physical machine off of a VHD. And so the VHD that you see reflected on this in the library is that VHD which is going to be used to actually deploy the physical machine. Now, the first thing we do is we issue an out-of-band command to the Windows, to the physical box. And we do that using a standard-based protocol. We support IPMI and SMASH. And these are industry standards which allow us to control, almost all the physical servers that we have come across. However, we actually have an extensibility model which allows third parties to plug in their discoverability and ability to reboot their servers. So at this point of time, the machine has got nothing on it. It's just a bare machine. You just rebooted it. It's just been configured to actually do a Pixie boot. And when it does a Pixie boot, it sends out a Pixie request packet, which is responded by the WDS server. Before it does that, it actually goes to VMM. Because when we deploy the WDS server and integrate it into VMM, we actually authorize the fact that this particular physical host can actually be booted off and supplied an image. And then we download a WinP image over the TFTP channel onto the physical box. Now, this WinP image that you have there is something that's constructed by VMM when you integrate WDS into VMM. So this this WinP image actually goes into the box, and it actually does a whole bunch of discovering of capabilities on the box, and it actually can run scripts there. You can actually provide custom scripts that you can run inside that box. It formats the file system, gets an NTFS image on there, and then we've got a little agent on that WinP box, which actually uses bits to then transfer that VHD, which is going to constitute the boot image for that box, onto that host. And then it can inject drivers. And after it's done, the machine reboots and it joins the domain. Now, all this information about which domain it has to join, etc., is included as a part of the host profile. And I'll show you a host profile a little later, which allows you to model how you want your physical Hyper-V host to look like. So you join the domain, and then we enable Hyper-V. So if you actually go to see, right, we can actually do pretty much everything that's required to make any physical box, any generic Windows Server box. Today, what we've chosen to do is to just allow you to enable Hyper-V. You know, but it's not too hard for us to actually decouple that and allow you to do different physical deployments in the future. Okay, so now that you have the physical Hyper-V server available, it's available in a host group, and it's available for you actually to do something with. So what did we do in SP1 to enhance this? So how many of you have run into this problem where you've got four NICs on your box, you reboot them, and what you thought was Ethernet card 1 shows up at Ethernet card 2? How many of you run into this problem? That's a good show of hands. For the others, I'm sure you've not tried this. That's why you haven't run into this problem. Because I can assure you that, you know, this is one of the most interesting and challenging issues that you run into, because all these Ethernet cards, when they actually get discovered, it depends on how they show up on the PCIe bus. So they sometimes get the same card will get renamed as Ethernet 1, or sometimes in the next time you reboot, it may get renamed as Ethernet 2. Now, that creates a challenge if you're trying to model how your computer needs to be connected on the network. So working with the industry, we came up with this capability, which is called consistent device naming. And what you can do now, using the firmware that's on the server, you can actually provide a consistent user-friendly name to the actual device from the BIOS. And each time, the same card will come back with the same reported consistent device name. So when we actually model your host profile, you can actually construct exactly how you want your host to look, and you can wire up that Ethernet 1 to the exact port on the switch on the top of the rack, and you will be ensured that next time you connect, you'll actually get the same naming. So that's a great benefit, because it provides you repeatability and sort of, you know, the ability to actually consistently deploy in the same fashion. The other thing is that we allow you to configure a logical switch, and I'll talk about what a logical switch is a little later. But I think the key thing I want you to understand here is, if you look at the bottom picture here, what's happening today is that, you know, the servers that you're buying actually have significant bandwidth coming out of it using 10 gig networks. Now, in the past, you know, when you had 1 gig networks, we used to say, look, I want you to dedicate a 1 gig NIC for clustering. I want you to dedicate a 1 gig NIC for live migration, and so on and so forth. But now that you have so much of bandwidth coming out of a single box, you do not have the luxury of having a 10 gig NIC dedicated for these kind of traffic. So what we allow you to do now is to potentially team two 10 gig NICs, create a virtual switch on it, and then even the network cards that are going to carry your live migration traffic as well as the clustering traffic can actually be virtual NICs that are connected off of the virtual switch in the management partition of Hyper-V. Right? And this is important, that when you bare metal deploy these machines, that you need to be able to model this and then have your host look exactly in that manner. So that's new in System Center 2012 SP1 Virtual Machine Manager, where we allow you to actually model your host profile to actually capture this capability in that profile. The last point is important. So if you go back to VMM in 2012, we only supported 400 hosts and 8,000 VMs. And so people said, well, you know, is that a tested limit? Is it a hard-coded limit? So we said, you know what? Let's just forget having that conversation. So we said, we'll take you up to 1,000 hosts and 25,000 VMs. Now, that chatter of conversation of asking about physical has stopped, but now people are saying, did you actually test this? Yes, we did. We actually did test, you know, when we actually released SP1. So we support up to 1,000 hosts under management under a single VMM server and up to 25,000 VMs being managed by a single VMM server. Now, you know, if you look at how we construct all our data centers, like even how we construct Windows Azure, for example, even in Windows Azure, we have this construct of a stamp. And the idea is that one stamp is controlled by one fabric controller. And in very, very large data centers, such as Windows Azure, you actually have multiple such stamps, right? So if you are running a large data center, which goes beyond, you know, 1,000 hosts, invariably what ends up happening is that you install one stamp with one VMM server, and you install a second stamp with a second VMM server. And then I'll talk about some technology that we released in SP1, which allows you to aggregate the capacity from these multiple stamps. So when we build these large data centers, that's how we architect them, and that's how we build them. And so even these solutions that we are providing to you as a part of System Center 2012 actually take those learnings and provide them to you so you can run your data centers kind of like how we run our data centers. Now, that's not to say that, you know, System Center actually powers Windows Azure, because they have a very different set of, you know, constraints they don't have the constraints that we have, because we have to support a variety of different hardware, and they can be very homogeneous. But it's the same, you know, sort of concept and knowledge that we actually bring to you to be able to actually deploy your systems. All right. So let's actually give you a little bit of a demo of, you know, how a host profile looks. And now we will see if that internet connectivity actually works for us. All right, well, it looks like so far we are up. So I'm going to go to this box. Now, I'm in Virtual Machine Manager. I'm in the library. And I'm actually looking at a host profile, right? So our sort of the basic premise that we are working on is the following, that anything you want to be able to do, whether you want to be able to bare metal deploy a host, whether you want to be able to deploy a virtual machine, whether you want to be able to deploy your applications, we want you to be able to model it so that it's repeatable. In running these large properties, you know, we've realized that the weakest link in IT unfortunately ends up being the human. And so us as IT administrators, right, our goal is to automate any task so that it is repeatable and error-free. And you do that by constructing models. So you construct a model for the host, you construct a model for the VMs, you construct a model for the applications, test it thoroughly, and then you can keep stamping them out over and over again. So the host profile concept, can people in the back see this, or do you want me to zoom this? Well, okay, so let me see if, you know, I'll zoom it out when. All right. So what this is a host profile, and you can actually see here that I've got a management NIC and a physical NIC set up here, right? And it's really trivial for me to actually go ahead and add a NIC. You remember I talked about being able to add a virtual network adapter, so this is new in SP1, right? So I can create a new virtual network adapter, and I can connect it to any of the networks that are available for me. In this system, I happen to have only one logical network that I can connect up to, right? And I can actually go ahead and connect myself into this. And then I have the ability, although it's not available here, that you can actually apply port profiles so that the uplink of this particular host is actually governed by policy elements that you set. Right, so you can set a whole bunch of policy on this VNIC. And so it allows you to actually model that and provide that capability here. So that's how easy it is for you to be able to construct a model of how you want your networks to be connected up. And once you do this, this host profile will be used by VMM to stamp out multiple hosts in your data center. All right. So that was that. All right. So now let's look at, you know, now that you've got your compute, and I'll talk of storage and networking a little later, now you want to construct a cluster. Now in VMM 2012, we allowed you to actually construct a cluster all the way from, once you get your hosts available, you can actually create a cluster right from inside VMM. So let's talk about what's new in SP1. So the first thing you can actually do is in clustering, you actually have the opportunity to say that this VM must actually, I prefer this VM to run on this particular host. So you can now set those policy elements right from inside VMM. We support CSV2, which allows you to have up to 8,000 VMs and have a large cluster of up to 64 nodes, right? And the last one is important, you know, anti-affinity. A lot of time you have times you actually have applications where you want to ensure that parts of the application, so for example, let's say you're running a multi-tier application and your middle tier has, it's a logically separated tier which allows you to have three or four instances running as your application tier in VMs. So you've got three VMs or two VMs that constitute your application tier. At no point do you want both those VMs to end up on the same host. Because if they do, and that host goes down, even though the host is clustered, you know, it's going to take a little while, you know, a few minutes maybe before the VM is brought up on a separate host. So you don't want your application to go down because of this. With anti-affinity, what you can do is you can actually tell VMM that I don't want these two instances ever to land up on the same host, and we'll honor it. Now people say, well, that's something that clustering supports. Yes, absolutely. That's what clustering supports. But what we have done is that we extend this to beyond clustering. So let's say you actually happen to be deploying without a clustered environment. If you got no cluster, we will still allow you to set anti-affinity and we will honor it. We will also honor anti-affinity, if you actually are deploying it across two different clusters. Right? So what I'm going to do now is try and show you a demo where I'm going to set anti-affinity for a setup and see how it goes. All right, so let's now, okay. I'm going to go to a different environment now. So here, if you actually see, this is a service template. I'm going to open the designer. You know, actually, this is not working too bad. Given the fact that, all right, so this is a template. And if you look here carefully, right, basically by checking that checkbox, that's all you need to do, I've basically said I want you to create an availability set for this tier, right? And if you actually go back to the demo that I gave at the keynote, when I gave the Azure demo, when I actually created the VM, I actually had an availability set construct there. And it's kind of the same concept, which says that, look, if you want to model it as an availability set, we'll ensure that your application is peeled apart and deployed on different infrastructure so it doesn't bring down your application at the same time. So this is kind of how we sort of bring those learnings back to you here. So basically, all I've done is done this. Now I'm going to actually go ahead and actually configure a deployment of this. Okay, let's go ahead and configure a deployment. I'm going to do it on all hosts. Let's construct this. And so now what VMM is doing, it is actually going out, interrogating the template, gets all the elements of policy from the template, and then it's going to try and place all the VMs for this particular template onto hosts in the underlying environment, right? I'm going to minimize this so you can actually see. So you can actually see that this particular template actually has four different instances, right? So I'm going to actually ask it to go and do the placement, right? So it's actually done the placement. It's come back with stars. And now I'm going to actually go ahead and ask it to deploy, right? Now, for the purposes of this demo, I've really made the VMs really small so that actually I can complete a deployment, show you how this actually works. A normal deployment, will take a few minutes because the full Windows server has to be deployed. These ones are like really small VHDs. Okay? So it's actually going out and doing the actual deployment and placing these VMs on the right hosts as per the policy that you indicated, that you don't want any of these instances to ever show up on the same host. So it's chugging along. So the way deployment of virtual machines actually works in VMM is that the VHDs are actually available on the VMM library. And what we are doing right now is based on the placement of these VMs on the Hyper-V hosts, we are actually now copying those VHDs onto the Hyper-V hosts. Now, of course, if you are working in a cluster, then we are copying it onto the clustered shared volume or the shared storage that's in use by the cluster, right? So it seems to have been done. Now let's go back. Let's go back to the VMs and services view. Right? Let's look at all hosts. Right? So let's go look at all these services. I'm sorry, all the VMs that constitute all these services. Okay? Actually. Let me go to the fabric view. I'm sorry. Okay. What? I apologize. I need to go back to the VMs view. Okay, so effectively what it's actually done here, and I'm able to bring up that page, but effectively what it's done is it's gone and placed all these VMs, all the VMs that constitute a part of the service on four different hosts, spread across actually both these clusters. There's a cluster A here, and there's a cluster B here. So it's actually spread the VMs across these clusters, and that's how you've actually got these systems up and running. All right. So that's that. So now let's talk about what we've done with storage, right? So when we look at storage, we want you to look at along three different vectors. The first and foremost, we want you to be able to get insight into how your storage is deployed. And that what that means is that I should be able to go all the way from a VM and all the way down to the physical volume on the SAN backend on which your VHD is actually deployed. And using VMM and the ability to be able to integrate using SMIS onto backend SAN systems, we can allow you to actually trace that entire path down, which is actually really critical if something does happen to go bad. The next thing is we allow you to classify your storage, right? So basically you say that this particular storage is gold class storage, and then in your templates for your deployments of virtual machines, you can basically say that I want this VM to be deployed in gold class storage. And at the time of placing the workload, we will make sure that the VM is placed on the right class of storage. In SP1, we actually allowed you to actually have a model for monitoring your storage in Operations Manager. And now we upload all the data into Operations Manager, so you can now actually get deep insight in using Operations Manager into how your storage is performing. And then, like I said, it's based on standards-based management. We in Microsoft have taken a very open approach to managing storage, and we are a very strong supporter of the SMIS standard coming out from an industry standards body called SNIA. It's called the Storage Networking Industry Association. They actually have a booth here. I'd encourage you to go down and encourage your vendors to participate in this, because we actually go to many, many plug fests. We actually interoperate, and I'll show you a slide. We actually have over 17 different types of SANs that are now validated to operate off of this, right? And the intent here is for you as fabric administrators to remove the friction so that you can get storage from your storage administrators as a large chunk of pool, and then you can carve it up as you need it right from inside VMM, right? The next thing we want to be able to give you is flexibility, You know, some of you want to be able to use block-based storage. Some of you are happy using file-based enhancements that have come in Windows Server 2012. So now inside VMM, you can use block and file-based storage with SP1. We want to be able to have scalable provisioning. You know, so we worked with our partners to make sure that their SMIS providers can actually handle, you know, faster provisioning as we put more and more load on the system. We have extensive support for SAN and NAS that I've spoken of. Actually, I spoke about the SAN, but we've done the same thing with NAS, again using SMIS. So some of you will actually deploy using file-based storage, using SMB3 from the Windows file server, and that's great. But some of you have relationships with your other partners who also might make available SMB3.0 file servers. And using SMIS, you'll be able to manage them just like you can manage Windows file servers as well. And then we allow you to do allocation and assignment of storage right from inside VMM. I've been talking of automation, which is key to how you do this reliably inside the data center. And rapid provisioning is one of the key advances that we made available for you, right? So you can use rapid provisioning to increase the speed at which you actually can deploy VMs. And we do that by allowing you to use SAN cloning capabilities of the VM. Of the SAN backend. We can onboard an existing array, so you don't have to do any change in management of that. We can manage VMs, hosts, and clusters, so you can do storage management for your cluster, create a cluster shared volume right from inside here, from the raw disks that are exposed into our systems. And then we also support this thing called SAN migration. So if your SAN actually supports, you know, copying, and this is not ODX, by the way. This is, if your SAN actually supports cloning, what we will do is we actually allow you to mask the VM from seeing its storage, and then we'll migrate the VM to the separate node, and then we'll unmask the storage so that it's available to the second node as well. Now, this does take a little bit of downtime, but we separately support, you know, storage migration as well. That's a different capability. But sometimes, you know, you just want to be able to move off of one SAN to the other, or move your VM from one node to the other, and, you know, do it with a little bit of downtime. And so this allows you to do that as well. All right, so what did we do new in SP1 from a storage perspective? So I'm sure most of you are familiar. You know, in Hyper-V up to 2008 R2, we had a VHD format called VHD. It had some limitations. It allowed you to create VMs only with up to 2 terabytes of storage. But we came up with a new format called VHDX, and the primary advantages of the new format are, first, it actually allows you to scale up to 64 terabytes for a single VHD file. Or VHDX file. The second, it actually has more resiliency built in. So in case you happen to lose power, this actually does much better in terms of being able to prevent corruption of data. The next thing, you know, now Hyper-V actually supports being able to boot straight off of SMB 3.0 shares. And so you can now actually have an external SMB 3 share onboarded onto VMM, and so you can actually provision your VMs right onto that SMB 3.0 share. Right? We have an inbox with Windows Server. We ship the Microsoft iSCSI target. So you can actually turn a Windows Server box into a block device. You know, a number of people want to do that. And what we did was that in VMM, we actually shipped an SMIS provider to be able to manage that Microsoft iSCSI target using SMIS as a standards-based protocol as well. We are compatible with synthetic fiber channel in the guest. You know, it's an engineering, challenge. We had a lot of work that we had to do in SP1. And unfortunately, we were not able to get to the point where we allow you to actually create virtual machines right from inside VMM using synthetic fiber channel. That's something that we will definitely fix in the next release. But for right now, if you want to be able to create synthetic fiber channel in the guest, go to Hyper-V, create that VM using synthetic fiber channel, and we will honor that and be compatible with that, right? And in the future, you'll be able to do that from VMM as well. We support live migration, and we'll automatically detect if your SAN supports ODX. And we make use of that optimal speed of channel in case the SAN supports ODX. We added support for SAS and Dynamit iSCSI targets. There are a few vendors who actually have these kinds of targets, so we added support for that as well. And we added the ability for you to assign LUNs to VMs using IQNs. Okay? This picture actually shows you architecturally what the storage stack now looks like, right? And if you look at it very carefully, this a layer, you know, this is the storage management layer, which is available only in Windows Server 2012. And it is this layer which actually we needed in order for us to be able to manage storage. This is not available in Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1. And this is the primary reason why you need to run VMM 2012 SP1 on a Windows Server 2012 box. So under this layer, we actually have three different providers. We have an SMB provider, which can, you know, and there are a couple of vendors who actually provide SMB-based providers. We have a large number of vendor population who's provided SMIS providers, so we can manage using SMIS. And then there is an SMB provider which allows you to manage storage spaces, which you saw as a demonstration this morning in... So this phone actually is getting a call. Can I decline the call? I think I'm going to do that for the time being. Hello? Yes, no, no. Okay. All right. So, and this is a list of partners that we've been working with. And it's amazing to see the kind of support that we have from partners. So if you have a storage vendor that you're working with and you don't see that on this list, please talk to your storage vendor and encourage them to join the SNIA industry forum so that we can do interop from them. It's a great opportunity for them to interact and interoperate with us. We go to every plug fest that SNIA holds for us. As you can see, it's a pretty comprehensive list, and this is growing ever so fast. All right. So now that we've got that, let's look at a demo for storage management, right? Now, we've given demos in the past where we actually, go ahead and create LUNs and so on and so forth, which is a good demo. You know, but I think this time we're going to, stir it up a little bit. So what we're going to do here is we have a PowerShell script. You know, a lot of you use thin provisioning today in your data centers to make sure, a lot of you actually use dynamic disks in using Hyper-V. And what that effectively means is that you are over-provisioning on storage because a dynamic disk only expands as and when the data starts to add to it, right? Now, that is good. It saves you storage, which is fantastic. But the challenge that you have is that you don't really know how over-provisioned you are on the actual storage. Because, if the disks actually start expanding to all their full sizes, you may actually run out of space on the physical disk. Now, VMM... anything in VMM that you can do from the UI, you can actually do from PowerShell, because we fundamentally believe that in a large number of cases you'd love to use the UI, but in large number of cases when you're dealing with large number of servers, you may just want to automate the heck out of this and actually use PowerShell. So what we did was in this demo, we've got a PowerShell script here. I've got it open here. If I can get to it. All right, here we go, right? And this PowerShell script basically is a very simple script, and I'm not going to walk through the entire script. But what the script essentially does is it goes to Windows, it finds out the capacity of the physical size of the disks that you have. Then it uses VMM to ask, VMM to say, look, the VMs that you've deployed, what is the maximum size of these dynamic VHDs that they can ever grow to? And then it calculates... what the overcommit percentage is and generates a report. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to actually run the script, and the script will actually generate a report. It's not a very fancy UI report, but you can see it does the job for us, right? So let's go take a look at this report and see what it does for us, right? So basically what you've seen here is that I've got two volumes which are at a critical stage because they seem to have been over-provisioned, right? So that's a very simple thing that you can do inside your data centers. Check how your overcommitting looks like. And we're going to, we're going to post this simple script, up in many, many snippets for you to be able to utilize, right? So now let's go back to the system and see what we do about this, right? So it turns out it is this VM that actually is now running on a volume which seems to be heavily overcommitted. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to migrate this virtual machine off of this box and off of this storage. All right, so I'm going to migrate this virtual machine. But I'm going to actually keep it on the same host. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to migrate its storage off of this volume that's critically, you know, running low on space. And I'm actually going to migrate it from this block-based storage device onto a Windows file server, because we now support storage live migration across all these constructs. So I'm going to take the current host. I'm going to leave the VM running on its current host. And I'm going to go through next. Right? And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to actually place this VM onto a Windows file share. I happen to know that this file share is available for me to use, exposed to this particular node. All right, so I'm going to place it here. I'll say automatically place all VHDs with the configuration. And there you go. And we are off. So effectively what I've done in this very simple demo is I've shown you how you can storage live migrate this VM. This VM is still running because I'm live migrating it from the storage perspective. I've taken it from a block-based device and I've moved it onto a file share-based structure so I can now actually have this VM running off of that. And the beginning of the demo, I showed you how you can use simple PowerShell scripts to actually get more and more information out of your underlying fabric. All right. So now let's talk a little bit about networking. Now, in terms of when we looked at sort of from an engineering perspective, when we broke it up in a pie chart to see how much investment we made in different areas of SP1, networking in VMM in 2012 SP1 underwent the most dramatic change. And the reason it had to go to the most dramatic change is because the underlying platform of Windows Server 2012 really came to life when it comes to networking perspective. We actually added a full-fledged SDN capabilities right into Windows Server 2012. And it is those capabilities that you can manage now at scale from inside VMM. So before I actually get into what's there in SP1, let me show you what constructs we added in 2012. Right? So in 2012, our mantra was the following. We said that, look, at the end of the day, as fabric administrators, we are deploying infrastructure so application owners can actually deploy applications onto this. And I talked to this at last keynote where I said, look, I have yet to meet an application owner who comes to me and says, I want to be able to deploy my application on a network which is called 10.10.10.1/26, because they have no idea what that network really means. They will come to you and say, hey, you as administrators, I want to be able to connect my application VM to the internet, and I want you to connect to Corpnet. Right? So what we allowed you to do in 2012 was to model that construct right from inside VMM. So we introduced a concept of logical networks, which basically said that, look, I may have two different areas inside the data center. In the left part of my data center, 10.10.10.1/26 corresponded to Corpnet. And on the right hand of the data center, 172.10.10.1/26 corresponded to Corpnet. But what we allowed you to do is to take both these, call both of these logically as a Corpnet, and we call this construct a Corpnet. A logical network. And then your application or VM never connected to the 172 network. All it said was that I want to connect to Corpnet. And then depending on where we place the VM, whether on the left side of the network or on the right side of the data center, we would automatically connect you up to the right switch and to the right network. So this allowed you to have a meaningful conversation with your application owners and have the infrastructure respond to the needs of your application owners. Right? Now, what we did in SP1, so this is what the picture looked like in 2012, where you had logical networks and virtual machines connected to logical networks. Right? But what we did in SP1 was we actually decoupled what you did on the physical side, and we called it logical networks. And then all VMs in SP1 now connect to what is called as a VM network. So we added another layer of indirection between your VM and your underlying fabric. So VMs in SP1 always connect to the VM network. The VM network always has to be layered on top of a logical network. Okay? And that's a big change that we actually made in SP1. Now, from a software network, from a SDN perspective, we have four different pivots that we took. First and foremost, we have an extensible platform. So the Hyper-V switch, as you see here, can be extended in functionality by adding extensions. And we have a variety of different extensions. You can have, you know, forwarding extensions, you can have firewall extensions, and we have four different types of extensions that can be loaded into the Hyper-V switch. And we've got many, many partners who are actually developing this. So we've got a company called Five9, which has developed an extension for being able to do firewalling. We've done got NEC, which has got an OpenFlow extension in VMM. In Hyper-V. And we've got Cisco, which has developed a Cisco 1KV switch, which is also a forwarding extension that gets deployed in Hyper-V. Right? That's the first part of our SDN story. The second part is the ability to actually construct networks on the fly. And just like we did in storage, where you can see, where we said that, look, give me an aggregated pool of storage and I'll carve it up how I want, we want you to do the same from a networking perspective as well. And that is what Hyper-V network virtualization allows you to do. And I'll talk a little bit about how we actually realize that as well. Then we added in the native Hyper-V switch, we actually added a lot of policy elements which allowed you to control how the traffic flows through the Hyper-V virtual switch. And then with VMM, you actually have a centralized control plane to actually provide management for the entire networking, storage, and compute fabric. So what is Hyper-V network virtualization? So let's go back and see what virtualization did for compute. You actually had a physical server, and on that physical server, you could run multiple instances of operating systems, giving each of them the illusion that they actually control the underlying physical hardware. That's exactly what network virtualization did. So on this slide, you basically have two different networks called the blue network and the red network. And both of these are realized on an underlying flat network. And each of them actually thinks that they are isolated and they run independent from each other. Whereas what we are doing using Hyper-V network virtualization is we are actually creating that isolated network on the fly for you. Now, the benefit of this is that, you know, when you're using something like VLANs, and people say, well, VLANs give me isolation. Absolutely, it does. But VLANs, you know, are limited, firstly, to 4,096. You know, and if you're running large data centers and you have large number of applications who require isolation, you'll actually start to run into a limit pretty soon. Realistically speaking, you know, when you run into about 1,400 or so VLANs, you'll start to see buffer overruns and all kinds of networking equipment inside your data center. So this, you know, with the Hyper-V network virtualization, you can actually create 16 million isolated networks, right? So it's a large capacity for you that you have. The second thing is that you can actually do this entirely in software. So it's really, really quick to do. So you don't have to, you know, go talk to your networking team to say, hey, I wanted to create a VLAN and then go across many, many, you know, different layers of communications and, you know, tickets and so on and so forth. You can just create these networks right from inside VMM for you. All right? So now that you actually have a virtual network, so the way a virtual network really works is it's really actually simple. What we do is that when we create the virtual network and the packet comes out from a VM saying that I want to be on this virtual network, when it goes through the physical Hyper-V host, we actually take that IP packet and we wrap it with yet another IP packet. So the address that the VM sees is what we call as the customer address space or the CA space. So if you go back to the demo that you saw this morning in the keynote, each VM, you know, in that visual that we had, each VM actually had two addresses. One was called the CA address, and the other is called the PA address. So the customer address is what the IP address the VM will see. So if you do an IP config inside the VM, that's the IP address that you will see. That's the IP address that will be contained in the packet as it leaves the VM. But when it goes through Hyper-V, we will actually wrap that packet in another packet, and that packet puts the PA address space on that particular IP address packet. So now you've got this packet and packet flowing through your network. But the beauty of this is that your, you know, networking infrastructure doesn't need to change. You don't need any special NICs. You don't need any special switches. They will just work as normal. However, if you do have some hardware-based intrusion detection systems which actually can't deal with packet and packet, you might have to work with your vendor. But other than that, for normal equipment, it'll just work out of the box. There's no extra hardware or special hardware needed for this. So as this packet is going out, then we route it to the right Hyper-V host, and then we strip the outer packet and then send the packet up into the VM as it's going up. But if you noticed, you know, this talks to how I can have one VM communicate to the other. But, you know, that happens a lot of times. But sometimes you want this VM to be able to talk to physical resources, right? You may actually have a file server that's running physical, or, you know, God forbid, you may actually have a SQL server that's running physical, right? So if you want to do that, you actually need to be able to go through a device which can actually deconstruct this packet so it can be understood by the physical layer and then reconstruct the packet as it comes back, right? So for that, you actually have this thing called as a gateway, right? And this gateway allows VMs who are on a VM network using Hyper-V network virtualization to be able to talk to a physical network. And this is exactly how it works, right? So you have this traffic coming out from the physical side, goes through the gateway, it's encapsulated, and then it goes into the VM. And on its way out, this packet comes out wrapped, it goes to the gateway, and in the gateway, it is decoupled and then sent to the physical machine on the other side, right? So in order for you to be able to talk across these boundaries, you need these gateways. And we've been working with the networking industry to actually have gateways that are available for you. In fact, on the show floor, you'll actually see a company called Iron Networks, which is demonstrating its gateway. Now, unfortunately, because of the loss of connectivity, I can't actually show you a demo of that, but I'm hoping that there are, that you'll be able to see that either on the show floor, or there are two networking sessions that we have on VMM, and you'll be able to go see them there as well. But what I'll do right now is I'll give you a demo where we've turned a Windows Server box into a gateway. And we'll actually make the scripts and code available for you to turn a Windows Server box as sample code for you to be able to utilize in your data centers. Now remember, this is not for production use. This is just for sample. All right? All right, so far so good. So I'm going to go to this. Am I on the right network? I'm sorry. All right, so first let's go see. Okay, so if you see here, I've got a Microsoft Software Gateway Provider. And what this does, it's a provider which actually talks to the underlying Windows Server box and then allows us to configure policy on that Windows Server box to be able to talk back and forth from it. Okay? Let's go to VMs and services. And let me show you how easy it is to actually construct a VM network. So I actually go here. I construct a VM network. This is the simplicity of how you can actually create a network. I'm going to just say MMS network. I'm going to bind it to one of the logical networks called tenant network. I'm going to use IPv4, and I'm going to isolate this network using Hyper-V network virtualization. Okay? I'm going to add a subnet. And one of the advantages of Hyper-V network virtualization is that actually allows you to have multiple subnets. Now, there are other software-based network virtualization techniques, which also provide software isolation, but they don't allow you to have multiple subnets, and sometimes that's a requirement, and Hyper-V network virtualization allows you to do that. So I'm going to say this. I'm going to create a subnet. And let's keep it small. Right? Now, if I actually wanted to be able to use this network to allow it to talk out to the physical network, I'll have to actually configure it so I actually connect to a gateway device. But I don't want to do that because I'm going to probably mess up this. This setup was not done to be able to allow you to do that right now. But the Iron Networks one will allow you to do that. So I'm just going to move forward like this, and I'm done. Now, as you can see, what I've done in just a few clicks of the button, right, I've actually got, if I go up here, I've actually been able to create this network right with a few clicks of the button. So that's how easy it is for you as data center administrators to now create isolated networks using Hyper-V network virtualization and VMM. So this was sort of the back-end part of the demo that you saw in the morning, where I live migrated a virtual machine from one host to the other and allowed both those VMs to actually have the same IP address. Okay? Let's go back. All right. Now, I talked about, switch extensibility, right? So we actually have an extensible system which allows you to extend the functionality of the Hyper-V switch. And I'm going to show you a demo of how Cisco has added this functionality. And let's see how that works. And how I can actually manage and configure this switch, right? So on this box, I have the Cisco 1KV setup. So if I go back to settings and you go look at these providers, you actually see that I've got a Cisco 1KV box setup, right? Now, a number of times it happens that your networking administrators actually want to be able to create networks using their Cisco tools, right? So what I've got here is I'm logged in to the Cisco. I'm sorry. Well, maybe I'm not logged in. So I'm going to log in to the Cisco 1KV switch, which is this, you know, standard Cisco CLI. And I've got a script here which actually allows me to create a network using Cisco command line tools. I'm going to do that. And hopefully that's done. That's done. So now what has happened is that a networking administrator using networking tools that Cisco has gone and created a network using Cisco's tools on the Cisco 1KV. And with the integration that we have in VMM, I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back to the provider. I have a switch extension manager from Cisco. Sorry, I need to go back. Sorry? Yep, there we go. I'm going to just refresh it back in. So what I'm doing by refreshing is with the integration that I have between VMM and Cisco 1KV, I'm going to read in that new network that was created. And if you actually go and see here, I actually created a network called the Cisco Tenant Networks right here. Right? Now let's go back into VMM and see how VMM has responded to this. So if I go back to my Fabric view and go look at logical networks, you actually see here, I have that same network that's now available for me to use. So basically this network, now actually I can create a VM network that can layer onto this Cisco created tenant network for me, right? So that's the power of the integration that we now have with your existing tool chain. All right. So in terms of working with partners, we have a very powerful SDN ecosystem which is doing a variety of different things such as building gateways as well as building extensibility into our system. So out here you see, you know, a whole lot of partners that we are working with. And if you have a networking partner who is not on this list, like I said before, please, you know, talk to them so they can actually work with us to actually integrate with us as well. All right. So now that you've actually got your underlying fabric, you know, we added this construct of cloud abstractions. And effectively what you do is you take your underlying compute, storage, and networking fabric and aggregate them into a pool and then make that pool of capacity available for customers to use. And in VMM, that construct is called a cloud. It actually is called a cloud. So if you have to go to the VMM console, you can actually create a cloud, assign capacity from hosts and storage and networking into the cloud. And now that you've actually got that cloud, you can then take that cloud and assign capacity from that cloud to user roles. We've got a very flexible user role model which allows that capacity from that cloud to be made available to that to users in that system. Now, in terms of, you know, how people want to set up infrastructure as a service, you actually have Virtual Machine Manager, which aggregates capacity from this, makes clouds available to you. And then with 2012 SP1, we actually provided a functionality called Service Provider Foundation, which provides a REST API on top of VMM for you to use. If you recollect, I talked about this capability for you to be able to aggregate capacity from multiple stamps. This is that functionality in 2012 SP1, which allows you to actually aggregate capacity from multiple hosts. I'm sorry, from multiple VMM servers and makes it available to you as a simple unit. And then you can actually build your own custom portals, or we also allow you to use App Controller and you consume capacity from a service provider who may have exposed capacity in this manner. Okay? Now, in 2012, we actually had VMM admins, you know, which were the which had guard rights over all the capacity that's available. You could actually take a subset of the physical hardware that VMM manage and make it available to a delegated admin. You know, sometimes you want to be able to say, look, this person can only manage capacity from these physical hosts. And then we actually had self-service users which had no visibility into the fabric but were able to utilize capacity from VMM. And with SP1, we introduced a new concept called the tenant administrator. And the idea here was that if a tenant administrator basically can get a large amount of capacity, they can get their capacity from there and then delegate some of that capacity off of their own self-service users. So that is something that's new in SP1 as well. Okay, so now that you've got all this capacity, you now actually want to deploy standardized services onto this infrastructure. And this morning, in the keynote, I showed you how you actually have a SharePoint template, which is a multi-tier template that you can actually deploy using VMM. That template is available for you to download today, and we'll make more and more available in the future. And if you have line of business applications, you actually have a visual tool in VMM 2012 SP1 and in VMM 2012 to be able to model these applications and automate the deployment of these applications. So the idea here was that let's say you had a multi-tier application, which had a web tier, an application tier, and a database tier. You can actually model the VHDs that constitute each of them. But not only that, you can also model the application content that actually goes on top of this. And what we will do in VMM is that when we actually go to deploy it, we will actually deploy the VM, we will deploy the OS, and then we will deploy the application content on top of this as well. And we actually have first-class knowledge about a whole variety of different application content. So we understand web dev packages. We also understand SQL DAC packages. So you can actually create an instance of a database on a SQL form, right? So what did we do new in 2012 with SP1? So first and foremost, you know, a lot of customers have an environment where the VMM server is not in a domain that the host is managing. You know, it happens mostly in the DMZ environment case. So today, we allow you to now deploy these VMs and services regardless of whether you have any trust relationship with the host on which you're actually deploying. You need to use certificates for us to be able to authenticate to that host, but you can now manage it in that manner. And we also allow you to actually deploy application content into VMs where the VM itself has no connectivity to the VMM server at all. We actually push application content into the VM through the Hyper-V host, to which we actually do need, you know, network connectivity for us to be able to manage it. Now, in 2012, we allowed you to take a share of SQL servers and then allowed you to deploy applications onto that SQL server as an app host. In SP1, we now allow you to treat an IIS farm as an app host as well. So if you've got an IIS farm and you've got a SQL farm, you can actually deploy applications without having to ever deploy a single VM on that. We allow you to do that in VMM in 2012 SP1. We allow you to completely use SQL Server 2012 and all the functionality that's available there for deploying applications as well. And the last thing we did was we allow you to customize and specialize Linux. You know, a lot of your customers actually are running Linux inside your data centers. And what we allow you to do now is to say that, look, I want to be able to specialize Linux, just I want to be able to specialize Windows. I want to be able to tell it what the host name it should be. I want to be able to provide an SSH key that I can use subsequently to log into that Linux machine. I want to be able to provide it an IP address. Right, you can do all of that, and you have the ability to run scripts inside that Linux VM as well. So using the scripting inside Linux, you know, you can set up an Apache server if you want, and all from inside VMM at the time of deployment as well. So what I'm going to do now is going to hop into a system and try and give you a demo of what we can do from service management in VMM. So I'm going to hop onto this system. And now let's see where I am. Okay, so first and foremost, I'm going to give you a very demo where I've got a simple template for you to be able to deploy a WSUS server, right? This is a Windows role. Now let's open the designer and see what this designer looks like, right? As you can expect, you know, this is a simple template. So it's got, let's see. Bring this up. Hopefully this is more visible now. So here I've got a single box, right? It's just going to deploy as a single instance. It's got two CPUs. I wanted to give it 4 GB memory. It's connected to the Contoso VM network, which is layered in, it's got a NIC, which is connected to the Contoso VM network. Very simple. But now, actually, let's go look at the properties of this particular template. And what I want to show you here is the powerful scripting capabilities that you have to be able to deploy this workload. So first and foremost, let's go look at OS configuration. Right? And if I go to roles and features, and let's go all the way down, right? And you'll see that here in the template, I've said that when you actually deploy a VM, I want you to enable the Windows Server Update Services database and the WSS services. So when we actually deploy the VM, we will actually specialize that VM and make sure that it has these particular roles available. But for those of you who've actually deployed WSUS, that's not all. You actually need to configure WSUS even after it's deployed. So let's go to see how to make that happen. So let's go to application configuration. And here you'll see that I've got a pre-installed script, which basically runs this script called wsus_config.cmd. And this that is captured in between at symbols is basically a service setting. So when I actually go and deploy this VM, what I'm going to get is the ability for me to customize which SQL Server instance this WSUS server needs to connect up into. Right? So now let's go take a look at what the CMD file does. Effectively, what's going to happen is I'm going to go into the box. I'm going to actually run this particular script when I actually deploy the VM. And our agent inside the VM does this. So let's take a look at what the script does. Well, the script is very simple. It actually goes ahead and calls a more sophisticated PowerShell script, right? And so now here I've got the PowerShell script. So as you can see, by chaining these scripts, now I have a very sophisticated capability for me to be able to deploy a WSUS server and have it fully configured by the time this VM is deployed. I wanted to show you a really simple service template so you can understand how you can do it in a simple case. Now, you can scale this out. So the demo that you saw this morning in the keynote actually had a multi-tier SharePoint farm, and that is deployed using these same constructs. So you can have these sophisticated scripts inside those VMs, which allow you to go ahead and deploy that SharePoint farm. Okay? Now, let's see if we can actually do, let's go see if we can actually deploy a VM. So I've got a Linux LAMP stack service template, right? And although I don't have the time right now, but if you actually open up this Linux LAMP stack, it actually has a bunch of scripts that allow you to configure Apache and configure the entire LAMP stack inside the Linux box at deployment time, right? So I'm not going to go through that deployment right now, but hopefully, we've got a session on services. You'll be able to see that in that session. All right. So this sort of brings me to the end of my talk, where I basically have walked through the entire stack of VMM, where we walked through configuring and deploying. We actually aggregated that configured and deployed storage, networking, compute into clusters. Then we created clouds. We assign those clouds for utilization by people. And then you can actually deploy standardized applications out of that. So this brings me to the end of my session. I'd be happy to take questions at this point of time. Thank you. Yes?
ODX support for VM provisioning. When is that going to be included?
So the question was, ODX support for VM provisioning. We will definitely include it. So let me just make sure I clarify. Like I said, storage migration will work with ODX. However, if you want to use a SAN, which is backing a VMM library, and that is trying to transfer using ODX, that is not supported right now in 2012 SP1. It'll be available in the next release of 2012. Next release of VMM, I'm sorry.
Next full release or service pack?
I'm sorry, I can't answer that question.
Come on.
But rest assured that we are working on it. It'll be available as soon as possible. Any other questions?
Are the service templates for single VM or multi-VM deployments also?
Yes. So this morning what I showed in the keynote was a SharePoint template, which is a multi-VM and a multi-tier template. And what I demoed here was a single VM template. Yes, absolutely. And there's a session on services. If I actually go down to this thing, there is a session here. You can actually go ahead and attend. And by the way, folks, please go ahead and fill out, your feedback. We'd love to hear from you both about the product and how you want us to do our sessions better. Any other questions? All right, folks.